he was still running it through his little cronies, and those little cronies are still there. I don't know what his involvement is, but I know when he was supposedly gone before, he was still running the company through Bruce Pritchard and these other guys. And until they purge these people from the company, I won't believe that Vince is no longer involved.
Hey, what's cracking? Welcome to the Jim Rohn Podcast. Episode number 310, where I am very, very excited to reconnect with my guest this week, because my guest this week is a combat sports icon. She was the first woman inducted into the UFC Hall of Fame. She is one of the biggest personalities and brightest stars in the history of combat sports. My guest this week is Ronda Rousey. Ronda was the UFC bantamweight champion. She brought home bronze in the women's judo at the 08 Summer Games in Beijing. She became the first American woman to medal in that event. She's a former WWE professional wrestler. She acted in the Fast and the Furious and Expendable franchises. And she's now once again an author with a brand new book, Our Fight, a memoir. She is one of the most interesting people in the world. She is one of my favorite people in the world. So let's get right to it. It is episode number 310 with Ronda Rousey, and it's coming at you right now. So Ronda, I have no idea where the time goes, but it has been a minute. I want to say it is so awesome to get a chance to get caught up with you and visit and talk about your new memoir, which is out right now. Ronda, what's going on? How are you?
Oh my God, so many things. Don't even tell me how many years it's been. Don't age us.
I know. I hate that, dude. That is the worst. That is the worst. Time is such a motherfucker, Ronda. But I will say this. I won't say when we met, but I will remind you. I think you know this already, so our listeners should know. When I first met you, I was hosting my program on Showtime. It was season number one. My longtime attorney, David Feldman, asked me, would you like to have Ronda Rousey on your program? And I said, hell yes, I would. And it was right around the time of your UFC debut. And as I look back, Ronda, honestly, I was blown away by the conversation. I was blown away because you and I had never met. But when you came on the set, I was blown away by your it, by your presence. You were intense, but you had this million-watt smile. The whole thing was just so awesome. But I do have to give you credit for something else. You said one of my favorite things ever on that or any other show that I've ever hosted. You and I were talking about the zombie apocalypse back in the day. And I want you to listen to this. I hit you for your strategy for dealing with them, and you did not blink. This is what you told me.
When the zombie apocalypse goes down, what is your survival strategy?
Fucking houseboats. Houseboats, man. It depends on the kind of zombies you're dealing with. You know, you could have slow all the time daytime zombies, or you could have sprinting fast nighttime zombies like 28 days later. So I don't really know. It would kind of depend. I would lean more towards houseboat if it was like sprinting, like nighttime zombies, because then you could just go out at night and then come back and chill in the daytime, and then you could just live on a boat, and it'd be cool.
Ronda, quote, fucking houseboats, man. Houseboats. It was so quick. It was so funny. And it was so perfect. It was so awesome. Okay, so that's one of my favorite lines. But Ronda, I have to ask, did you ever get a houseboat?
I never got a houseboat, but we learned how to regeneratively farm. And so we like learned how to be completely off grid. And we got up, like, our forever home is literally on an island on the side of like a mountain in the middle of nowhere. So I feel like if the zombies can make it to the island on our farm that we regeneratively like live off the grid, we'll have the high ground where I can like roll boulders down or something.
Ronda, you still rule after all this time. So, okay, what's that like? Before I ask you about the book, so you live off the grid. What is this like? What is life like off the grid?
Well, right now we kind of live off grid in the city. So we're all on solar. We have water catchment. We raise our own animals in the back. We compost their manure to fill our planter boxes to grow our own produce. And it's kind of like our test property before we go really out to the middle of nowhere and don't have like the grid to fall back on.
Is that the plan?
Yeah, my plan is to not have to interact with anyone ever again unless I want to.
I like that. I like that a lot. I mean, that's great if you can pull that off. Listen, you first became a best-selling author back in 2015 when you wrote My Fight, Your Fight. You've said that this book, the new one entitled Our Fight, a memoir, is about your, quote, personal war with public perception and everything in between, end of quote. Pretty heavy. Break that down for me. What do you mean by that specifically?
I guess, like, our fight was when this part of my life where I'd become a public figure and everybody that had been reading the story had really become part of it. You know, our paths had intersected. And but sometimes it felt like I was fighting against everybody, you know, that was watching and part of the journey in that way. And sometimes it felt like, you know, we were all fighting for the same things together. So, you know, our fight, so many layers.
So many layers. I mean, the journey itself, so many layers. So, like, I mean, you're extremely real and extremely raw in this book. Was it difficult to put all these experiences to paper, or was it cathartic, or maybe a little bit of both?
A little bit of both, but I did it with my sister, Maria. We wrote it together. And so she is the kind of person that I would want to talk about these kind of things because she actually cares about me and what I went through. And it's not like it didn't feel like I was just rattling these things off to somebody, that it was just a job to them, you know. And so it really brought us a lot closer together as sisters and helped me get like a lot of closure on parts of my life that I wouldn't have spent the time to think that deeply about otherwise.
So Rhonda, when you talk about wanting to go off the grid so then you can decide if and when you want to interact with folks, is it because you're just naturally introverted? Is it because of these experiences that you had and that maybe you just don't want to do it? Like, why do you feel that way in terms of, I really don't want to see anybody unless I have to or I want to?
I've always been really introverted and shy, actually. I hated public speaking and I make myself do it. I'm good at it, but it's not like my happy place. You know how some people, like, they recharge when they're in a room with a bunch of people and like mixing around and being social? That's my husband. He loves that. I very much kind of, it's like taxes my energy. I'm like trying to like do a good job, you know, I want to win the conversation. And so I can't just like sit back and relax unless I'm like with my people. I'm such an entertainer that if somebody is around that I don't really know, I feel like I have to entertain you. I have to make sure that you're having a good time. And so it's kind of like, I guess, taxing. And then when it got to the point where I was a public figure and had like little paparazzi camped outside my house, or, you know, people jumping on a plane to follow me anywhere I was going, and people, you know, camped out in the alleyway and taking pictures of me coming out the back door to feed my dog and stuff, that just kind of pushed my Gollum features into overdrive, where if it wasn't for my husband, I would like literally be inside the Misty Mountains and be like, no, I'm never leaving.
Wow.
But yeah, I just, you know, I could live in a cave and just game from my whole life and be all right.
So, like, when you were the first female fighter, of course, to sign with the UFC in 2012, and when you were piling up those just dominant, electric wins as bantamweight champion, how did it feel to be seen as, quote, the baddest woman on the planet? And looking back, what do you remember most about that time? What was that like?
Well, it felt really, you know, validating, because I felt for so long before that I could beat any woman in the world with my bare hands and nobody could stop me, but, you know, nobody believed me and I didn't have any way to prove it. So once that happened, I was like, good, now they know. But it was also really tiring, and a lot of anxiety went along with maintaining that. You know, it was something that was could be lost at any moment and at any defense. And I was never really allowed time to rest in between fights. It was just on to the next one, on to the next one, on to the next one. So it always felt like there was just this ominous thing happening in the future that I had to confront and battle and, you know, succeed. So there wasn't any real time to like rest on my laurels and enjoy it. It was just like a frantic, constant trying to maintain it.
Let's talk O'Reilly Auto Parts. They're in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. The team at O'Reilly Auto Parts can test your battery for free in or out of your car. If it needs to be replaced, they'll help you find just the right battery for your vehicle. Need your windshield wipers replaced? A brake light fix or a quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. Whether you're a car aficionado or an auto novice, you will find the employees at O'Reilly Auto Parts are extremely knowledgeable, helpful, and best of all, they are friendly. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto, do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/Rome. Once again, O'ReillyAuto.com/Rome. So you successfully defended that title 6 times before you took on Holly Holm in 2015. I can remember, Rhonda, I wasn't
there. I want to say 7 times, including Strikeforce. No one ever...
I stand corrected. Corrected 7 times, including Strikeforce. Let the record reflect. And then she shocked the combat sports world when she knocked you out with a kick to head in the second round. You detail in the book, though, that you were dealing... You were less than 100% going into that fight. What were you dealing with, and how much do you think it impacted the outcome of that fight?
Basically, that fight was... a neurological injury, decades in the making, finally coming to a tipping point. And when I was doing judo for 10 years, I was experiencing concussion symptoms more often than not. We just didn't have the research and everything about the long-term effects of concussions that we do now. And it was the kind of thing where you would get one and then you'd be told to suck it up, don't be a pussy, and push through it. And so you just keep aggravating it. So I would get one concussion and then, you know, be taking all these falls and different kind of things every single night to keep the symptoms going for weeks and even months on end before they would resolve themselves. And every time you get a concussion, it's easier to get another one. So then by the time I got into MMA, any kind of significant strike would, you know, give me concussion symptoms, make me see stars. I would get like photo vision, headaches, nausea, numbness, and all these different kinds of things. And with every fight, even though I was winning very quickly, there's 50 rounds of sparring that goes into every fight. And it got to be that strikes that were less and less hard were, you know, giving me concussion symptoms, making me see stars and all these different things. So then right before the home fight, I slipped down some stairs and knocked myself out on some stairs 2 weeks before and tore my knee out on the same fall. So I went into the fight having the worst weight cut of my life. I was just so stressed out and overworked that my body was just not letting go of the weight. And we had the least time ever to recover from the weigh-ins because we were filming in Australia to, like, you know, hit the times for the night before in the U.S. And it was just like so many things going wrong at once. I had the wrong mouth guard that didn't have the back to, like, the back teeth to keep the back teeth in line. And literally the first time I got tapped in that fight, it knocked all my bottom teeth loose and I was completely like out on my feet and was just trying to hide the fact that if I got swarmed in on, I was done. Like I don't know if anyone's ever had a major concussion before, but it's kind of like you can't see in 3 dimensions. It's like you can't tell distance between things. There's big giant splotches, like big dots in your vision where you can't see. So I literally like couldn't see and was trying to make it look like I wasn't hurt and kept telling myself, okay, just make it to like, you know, the next round, be able to sit in the chair and then you can recover. And I just never could. And after that point, I couldn't even take a jab and not get a concussion, get dazed, or, you know, be out, knocked out on my feet. So I tried to eliminate everything that happened in the first, that first match and go into the next fight, you know, not doing an overwhelming, not taking on the overwhelming amount of media, having a good weight cut, not going in already concussed, having the right mouth guard, all these things. And the first time I got touched, I was out of my feet. And it was just, even though I'd never been faster or stronger or better mixed martial artist, I had reached that point where I couldn't take those hits anymore. You know, I just didn't have the hardware for it. I wasn't neurologically fit to compete at the highest level. Wow. And I couldn't talk about it because I couldn't let my next opponent know. And once I was done with the UFC, first of all, I didn't want to talk to any of the fucking media because they were absolutely you know, being really disrespectful and like crucifying me, and like people that I really felt like I had some mutual respect with. I saw that it was not mutual, and I didn't want the WWE to know I was going into the WWE, and they have their own history with CTE and concussions. They might not have hired me if they knew how often I was getting concussions. That if Nikki Bella gave me an open hand slap in the face and gave me a concussion, they wouldn't have allowed me to, you know, perform in my matches. And so it was something that I just had to keep to myself until now that I'm done.
Rhonda, sometimes when I talk to somebody, I'll say, you know, man, that there's a lot to unpack there, but holy shit, Rhonda, there's a lot to unpack there. That is an incredible response. I want to ask you this, though. That defeat really was brutal. It was brutal in the sense that, as you said, there was an accumulation of hits that you had taken and concussions you had suffered, and it was tough. It was a really physically brutal evening. I want to ask you this. You once told me in an interview, before you lost, you once told me this, you would rather die than lose in the cage. That said, when you suffered that defeat, how traumatic was that? I mean, in a way, did it feel worse than death?
I mean, we covered it in the book that, yeah, that dying would have felt better than that. But I think what made it the worst was I knew that I was done, that I couldn't fight anymore, that I'd reached that point where I just couldn't take the impacts anymore. And so like a lot of people made their own assumptions about it and everything like that. And I came back and I fought basically for everyone else because I felt like I owed it to the fans and everybody. And then when I saw how quickly the fans and everyone turned on me, I realized, wait, I don't owe any of these fucking people anything. And they don't actually care about me. And all of their love was never real, but so is all of their hate. And I was able to separate myself from my self-perception from my public perception finally, and that's what really forced me to do it. And I think that's why this book was so important, because like you said, there's so much to unpack that none of this could be adequately addressed in just a podcast or an article. It had to be a book because there was just so much going on that I couldn't explain myself any other way.
So I've got a quick question for you. Are you looking for ultimate comfort and pain relief? Let's compare G-Defy shoes to other shoe brands that promise comfort and support and pain relief. Typical shoe brands rely on EVA soles for cushioning, but G-Defy offers so much more. G-Defy goes above and beyond with VersoShock technology, providing superior shock absorption and energy return if you suffer from foot, knee, or back pain. G-Defy's advanced technology may help provide you with the relief you deserve. I can't even believe these shoes and the difference they make for me. G-Defy shoes also offer two free supportive orthotics to help improve your body's biomechanics, resulting in proper body alignment and ultimate comfort. Yes, they do all that. So whether you're an athlete, a busy parent, or just somebody who's always on the go, G-Defy shoes offers the versatility and the comfort that your feet crave and need. Say goodbye to discomfort. G-Defy is more than EVA soles. It could be your path to unparalleled comfort and pain relief. Visit G-Defy.com today. Experience ultimate comfort and pain relief at G-Defy.com. G-D-E-F-Y.com. Use the code GYM30 for $30 off orders of $150 or more. That's code GYM30 for $30 off orders of $150 or more. G-Defy shoes. They are incredible. Rhonda, what a mind fuck that is. I mean, to think, like, these people love me, these people love me, these people love me, and then they turn on me, and then I lose, and I'm not in a good place at all, physically, probably not emotionally, but, man, these are my fans, I owe it to them, and then I go out there, and it goes badly again, and they're motherfucking me again. I mean, what a terrible place. I mean, you must have had to do such hard work to process that and get through that. And there had to be, because you would later appear on Ellen DeGeneres after the home fight and say that you had suicidal feelings. I mean, you had to be in such a dark, dark, dark place. Here's the thing. I've always said this about that sport, about MMA, about UFC. Rhonda, everybody loses. Everybody. And I mean everybody, not most people. Everybody loses. So if, in fact, you were suicidal, why did that loss hit the way it did? I mean, did you really seriously contemplate ever taking your life?
Yeah. And it wasn't the first time, you know, like I had a lot of really low self-esteem when I was a kid in middle school and stuff like that. And, you know, my dad and grandfather, both committed suicide. And once you see it's an option, and it's always an option in your mind, but yeah, it wasn't just the loss in itself. It was the fact that I knew that my career was over at that point. I knew that I couldn't be in the cage and take those impacts effectively anymore. And I'd never been better. And I had to walk away when I'd never been better. And it was so much a part of my identity my identity was to be the champion. And that was suddenly gone. And I'd been, you know, in denial about how bad it had been and how bad it was getting. And it forced me to face the music that I couldn't fight anymore. And no one was ever going to understand. And I was always going to be judged from that performance. When, you know, I look back and I think, like, damn, I was able to stay on my feet after being knocked out on my feet for more than a round. But everybody else sees that and they see, oh, look, Rhonda is getting outclassed. And I look at that and I'm like, I can't, like, see, you know, there was one point in the match, I saw a clip where, like, I completely swing and miss and, like, continue and hit the cage and everything like that. And, you know, there's all these people being like, oh, look at that. Look how terrible Rhonda is as a fighter. And I'm like, I look at that and I'm like, damn, like, I was so out of it. I couldn't even, like, tell where she was in space. I was swinging. I couldn't, like, I would never, like, lose my balance and fall like that against the cage or anything like that. And I look back at that, I'm like, damn, that is a neurological injury that is really sad to see. And I didn't want to be one of those fighters that stuck around too long and continued to deteriorate in front of everybody. And I didn't think I would represent the sport the best that way, because I am a representative for women's MMA now, and the long-term effects of it and aging gracefully is kind of my responsibility now.
You know, exactly right. And then, so then you kind of reinvent and you go into pro wrestling. And the thing about that is, like, it might be choreographed and it might be sports entertainment as opposed to a sport itself, but it doesn't mean that it's not physically demanding. In fact, how dangerous is it?
I think what makes it the most dangerous is that they don't allow the wrestlers to rehearse. It's all thrown together last minute at the show itself. And a lot of the times people are going out there performing these matches for the first time with no rehearsal and just, like, talking about it backstage or in the ring for a little bit and running through a spot or two. And that's what I think makes it the most dangerous, not the things that they're doing themselves. And but I mean, things can happen. It's, you know, but it's also, it's choreographed, and you should be able to be prepared and know how to do everything. But if you've never actually rehearsed it and you're going through it the first time because the company refuses to take the time to actually get their shit together before they arrive at the arena, that's when accidents happen. That's when people accidentally get spiked on their head and internally decapitated and things like that.
Yeah, it's certainly, you'd not hope for that. So, Are you craving some protein after a good workout? Of course. This time, though, don't make a shake or eat a bar. Grab a bag of beef jerky from Old Trapper. Old Trapper beef jerky is tasty and tender. It's made with real strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a wood fire, and it goes wherever you go. To the game, to the gym, to the beach. Look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. You can see the quality you're buying. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, ask for it by name because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? If the company won't even let you rehearse, right, or you don't rehearse, if it's that dangerous and the performers are the product, I mean, it doesn't sound like they're doing a lot of work to take care of their talent. In fact, did they just not give a fuck at all, the company?
I had Bray Wyatt pull me aside and give me the advice to talk about in the book. And he was like, these people act like they care about you, but they don't. We're just pieces of meat to them. You just get in, you make your money, and get out. And the thing is, there's always going to be a line of people waiting to replace whoever's on TV. And so they haven't had to change, and so they don't.
I mean, Ron, two totally different worlds, but you compare that to your experience with UFC. Did you ever feel that way when you were with the UFC?
What, that they didn't care about us?
Yeah, that there's a line of people, that anybody can do it, that they don't care about you. Like, how would you compare those two experiences?
I mean, there's definitely a line of people waiting to get in the UFC, but in the UFC, the proof is all in the pudding. You know what I mean? Like, are you winning or are you not? And if you're not winning, then you probably shouldn't be in the UFC. You're getting knocked around. It's not good for you. And so I think in the UFC, it's all in your hands and all dictated by the fighter themselves. And with the WWE, it's all out of the talent's hands and dictated by the company.
I want to reiterate that when you and I are having this conversation, you're right. There's no way to cover all these things in a podcast or a long-form podcast, hence the book. And all of this is in the book and some other things, too. You know, former WWE chairman Vince McMahon is no longer with that company. He's been accused in a civil lawsuit of sex trafficking as well as physical and emotional abuse. What was your personal interaction with him like when you worked for the WWE?
Well, my personal interaction was that he didn't give a damn about any of the wrestlers. I came to him directly and was like, I can't show up in the arena and throw a match together like this and go out there and do it. I need to be able to rehearse. It's not allowing us to do our best work, and it's making it needlessly dangerous. And we need to be able to rehearse these things. We need to know what we're going to be doing beforehand. And he basically was like, don't worry, you're going to do a great job, and sent me out of the room. He cared more about being able to change the show over and over again until the last minute and not have to spend any time thinking about the show until he got there than he actually cared about the product itself or the well-being of the athletes. I mean, he was really someone who really cared about himself more than anything. How much money he made or the bottom line or the company or the people. No, it was just about him and his own experience doing it.
So he's out. He's out. Or is he out? Like, does he still have
influence? I don't know. I don't think he's out because he was out before, out, you know, in quotes. And he was just running the company via text through, like, his cronies there, Bruce Pritchard, namely being the guy who I never heard him express an opinion of his own ever. He would always be like, Vince says this, Vince says that, Vince says this, Vince says that. When Vince wasn't even there anymore, when he was supposedly out of the company and not creatively involved, he was still running it through his little cronies, and those little cronies are still there. So I'm not there anymore. I don't know what his involvement is, but I know when he was supposedly gone before, he was still running the company through Bruce Pritchard and these other guys. And until they purge these people from the company, I won't believe that Vince is no longer involved.
So when you look back on it, like the entire WWE experience, do the positives outweigh the negatives? Are you glad you did it?
Oh my God, I'm so happy I did it. The women in the locker room and like the people that I got to perform with were the absolute like bright spots. And That's why so many people put up with it, because it's amazing. It's so great to be out there and to lose yourself in the story and have the crowd be with you. And it's such an intoxicating feeling. And it's why people put up with all the bullshit, is because it's so fantastic. And the people that you're working with are so passionate and basically obsessed with it. And it's such a good time. And we're constantly out there, you know, trying to make each other break character or playing with the crowd, or we'll have something crazy unplanned that happens in the moment, and we'll improvise and like end up laughing about it for years afterward and stuff like that. And it's an absolutely incredible experience that I cannot believe that the WWE, the company, could make it so stressful needlessly and like try and spoil something that is that great on its own. So hopefully with the buyout and everything, they're getting their act together and they're changing the way that they do things and getting, you know, Vince's claws, you know, unhooked from the business. But I'm not there anymore. I can only speak from past experience.
Hey, listen, I've got to tell you guys about this. So the other day, I come across a product that all of us should be carrying around, a product that I now carry around. It's something different for fresh breath. It's this amazing product called Zelman's Minty Mouth. And guys, it is an absolute game changer. If you're up in the grill of somebody else making your case for whatever it is, make sure your breath is fresh. If it's not, they won't hear what you're selling or saying anyway. Zelman's cleans your breath in a way that other mints don't and can't, because it's not just a mint. It's a functional breath freshener capsule that you swallow. Clinically tested against the toughest offenders like garlic and onions even. You just pop two or three in your mouth, you suck the minty coating, then swallow the capsule for the confidence of fresh, clean breath that lasts for hours. This product is like nothing else you've ever tried. It fights bad breath in your mouth, and then it goes down to your gut. This is the ultimate hack to get rid of coffee, garlic, or smoker's breath. It's that strong. You're going to love having the confidence of long-lasting fresh breath or your money back. That's right, or your money back guaranteed. These folks will give you your money back. Not that you'll want it, but they will. They have free shipping if you order three packs or more. And trust me, you're going to want more. And nobody likes to pay for shipping, right? So go to Zelmans.com right now. That's Zelmins.com right now. Do it now, and you'll get 15% off when you use my promo code ROME. That's Zelmins.com. But you have to use the code ROME, R-O-M-E, to get your 15% savings. Do it. Do it right now. Yeah, but I can tell you this. I can hear it. The million-watt smile came back in that answer. I could definitely hear it and the tone you used. Before you go, a couple quick things. I mentioned the crazy it that you always had, that aura that you always had. I understand now you're kind of partially off the grid, but not fully. But what about the big screen? Like, when that opportunity came, you, of course, hit that thing. You hit that thing hard. You were in the Fast and Furious series as well as the Expendable 3. Did you enjoy that part of your career? Would you like to pursue acting once again?
I absolutely enjoyed it. Would love to do more. But I also have not had anyone just waltz up to me and hand me a greenlit Enter the Dragon yet. I cannot believe this.
Yeah,
but
right?
So I've actually taken some initiative and have started like writing screenplays on my own to kind of, write my own Rocky, write my own Enter the Dragon. No one did it for Bruce Lee or Sylvester Stallone. They did it for themselves. So yeah, I've been like studying screenwriting for the last couple of years, and it ended up being something that I really just enjoy on its own. That is really just rewarding for me, a process to do. And even I'm completely unproven as a lead or as a writer. Like no one's going to buy my stuff or cast me, but I realized that I really love this kind of creative writing. And I've actually, my first screenplay is getting made into a comic book right now. And that it could end up being like the unexpected path that I go down with all of these stories that I've written and to make them into graphic novels and stuff like that. And yeah, if I end up being the next Bruce Lee, that'd be really cool. But if I end up being the next Stan Lee, that could be even cooler. So, you know, I'm just kind of playing it by ear and doing what I can to be proactive. But if Hollywood never believes in me, I've done enough.
What's their loss? Listen, you've done enough, but the thing that I'm getting from this is you haven't done enough and you're still trying and you're still putting yourself out there and you're taking a shot. You're right. Like, if you're the next Bruce Lee, great. If you're the next Stan, great. If you're both, even better. I mean, do you remember the first time, like, as a kid, I saw Enter the Dragon, man? It was such a fucking cool movie. It was so great. And I wasn't even in that world the way you were in that world. Do you remember the first time you saw Bruce Lee, like, in a movie and what you thought of him? Like, what did you think about Bruce Lee?
Damn, you know, I think it's so early on, it's just kind of like meshed into my psyche. I can't remember like when I first became aware of him, but I just love martial arts and people like him. He really personified the philosophy behind martial arts. You know, there's a difference between a sport or a martial art. Is a martial art is paired with a philosophy that is exemplified through, you know, that art. And the way that Bruce Lee would always pair his fighting with his philosophy is something I feel like is almost getting lost in martial arts these days. And something that, you know, his work will really preserve forever.
So, Rhonda, really quickly, you are married. You mentioned your husband. You're married to a former UFC heavyweight contender, Travis Brown. You became a mother when your daughter was born in 2021. How rewarding is it to have a family of your own, and what's it like being a mom?
Oh, my gosh. Well, Travis Brown coming into my life, I was like instant family. I was like world's most eligible bachelorette to like a husband and children right away. And then we ended up having Poe and growing our family together. And it's just something unlike I ever could have expected it being. And my sons have actually never watched my fights. You know that?
No. Wow.
They've never watched my fights. Neither has my baby. There's like no evidence in my house that me or my husband fought or that I wrestled or
Why?
Anything
Why?
Like
How
that.
How come, Rhonda? How come? Why is that?
I think it's just we like having like our world apart from it. And when I was a little girl, I discovered a scrapbook in the closet that was all these articles of my mom winning all these tournaments in judo and her becoming a world champion in judo. And I like discovered one day that my mom was like this superhero. And, you know, I kind of, for some reason, I want to like let Poe figure it out one day, you know, like that, not something that she just knew forever, that that's something that she remembers discovering.
So Poe, if Poe figures it out and then says, you know what, that is so awesome, that is so cool, I want to do that, I want to be that, what's your response going to be knowing what you know?
I mean, if she wants to do it, I'm 100% going to do everything that I can to make sure that she's successful in it. You can't make somebody fight, but you also can't stop them.
So leave me with this thought. What's Travis like, aside from being 6'10 and being that guy? What's he like?
What's he like? Oh, my God. He's such a dreamboat. He's just so romantic and sweet and patient and kind and hilarious. He makes me laugh all day long. My baby's here in the background. I don't know if you could hear. But one example of Travis Brown being amazing is when we first got together, I was like, I'm never cooking. I'll never cook for a man. That was like one of my things, one of my walls, right, that I had up. Because when I was fighting, everyone would, you know, I'd always get these people being like, that's a weird looking kitchen and you should be in the kitchen. And I was like, I will never go to the kitchen for anyone ever. So Trav was like, fine, I'll cook. And he cooked for me for a year. For a year, he cooked every single meal and he just wanted to show me, like, this isn't something subservient. This is how I express my love for you. And he, like, showed me. He never pressured me. He was the example. Until, you know, after a year, I was like, you know, I make some really good pancakes. Try some of my pancakes. And so then it got to be that I was cooking for, you know, all the meals for a while. And now he's like Mr., you know, beef master and like cooks the best steaks ever on earth. So he does a lot more of the cooking, but it's just like one of my favorite examples of him knowing exactly how to love me and to show me how he wants to be loved, and not in a way where he's like, you should cook for me, you should be able to, you know, show you love me that way. Instead he demonstrated it. And that's one of the millions of stories of Travis Brown just being the best husband ever.
That is a great story. I'm glad I asked. The memoir is out, Our Fight, a memoir. You can get it wherever you can get your books. Rhonda, I appreciate you so much. I'm so glad, because I respect your privacy and I respect your life and I respect you. I'm just so glad that, one, you remember the way you and I first came together years and years ago. I so appreciate that. And I so appreciate getting caught up with you. That was so fun. Congrats on your book. I'm really anxious to see what the next chapter holds. And if you become a big star on the screen once again, or whatever you decide to do, I just know this. It was great to get caught up with you, Rhonda. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me on. Thank you for listening to Dave that first time and taking a chance on me.
Let's talk O'Reilly Auto Parts. They're in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. The team at O'Reilly Auto Parts can test your battery for free in or out of your car. If it needs to be replaced, they'll help you find just the right battery for your vehicle. Need your windshield wipers replaced? A brake light fix or a quick service, they'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. Whether you're a car aficionado or an auto novice, you will find the employees at O'Reilly Auto Parts are extremely knowledgeable, helpful, and best of all, they are friendly. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto, do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/Rome. Once again, O'ReillyAuto.com/Rome. Tell you what, how incredible was that? Always great to pick up right where you left off. 1 million megawatt smile and all. I am so thankful to Rhonda for making that time to reconnect and to go long form and being real and raw and vulnerable for the original Side Hustle. If you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did, you should go pick up her book, Our Fight. It is available right now. It is an amazing read. And while you're at it, you might consider subscribing to this podcast, because there are plenty of more conversations like that one as well. I've already pumped out over 300 eps, and I am not slowing down anytime soon. So if you would, please take a second and subscribe, and you will never have to chase down another episode. They will always find their way to you as soon as they do go live. Once again, thank you very much for listening, and I will catch you all next week for episode number 311. See you then.